The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody. Hour number two on day number three of the month of May. Happy Monday. Hope everybody's good. Hope everybody's weekend was good. We're going to welcome a couple of guests who had a quite lovely weekend because they, out of a field of 20-some, made the runoff. 1 hour from now, Jake Elzey joins us right now, joining us from that Texas 06 runoff. The vacancy, of course, created by the unfortunate death of Ron Wright, a friend of mine, a friend of ours for a long, long time. And along on that ride with him and thus with me and with all of us who knew Ron, his wife, Susan, who is the top vote getter on Saturday and joins us. Susan, welcome and congratulations. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So it was a massive field, and in a field of like 24 people, if you pull down, you know, like 19%, that's a big deal. You knew the runoff was coming, but I guess it was just a matter of against whom. Was that the only suspense on Saturday night?
Well, it was. You know, there was a couple of noteworthy things that happened. First, we had a strong field on the Republican side of candidates to choose from that represented the spectrum of the party. So this wasn't an easy feat for any of us. So I'm really proud of the work that we put in, and I'm thrilled with the outcome, of course. But I think the other thing that's noteworthy is the volume of turnout. I mean, Republicans outvoted Democrats by a sizable margin. And I think that that's a testament to the commitment of the voters of this district, that they really want to return to the America First agenda, and they really reject this administration's policies this early in the term. So I was thrilled with the outcome on multiple different levels.
It's
on
funny.
Saturday.
Everybody always talks about something's a referendum on Trump. I went into this thinking it was a referendum on Biden, because after all, he's president. And if you tally up everything that you and Jake and Brian Harrison and Siri Kim and all the other good Republicans got, it was like 62%. The Democrats totaled 37. This was always going to be a Republican seat. What's different? Honestly, in terms of vote total, Jenna Lynn Sanchez came in right behind Jake. You came this close to running against a Democrat. So what's different strategy wise between running against an actual Democrat and one of those intra-party things that we sometimes get?
Well, I don't know that the strategy will be that much different. I think that the conversations will be different, obviously, at whatever forums we have. But, you know, our strategy all along has been to talk to the voters. You know, you've known me and Ron a long time, Mark, and you know that that's what we love to do. So that's what we've been doing. It's what we've been doing since we got in this race, and it's what we'll continue to do. You know, my priorities are the priorities of the people of the 6th District. So we're going to continue to talk to them. We've knocked on tens of thousands of doors, and we're going to go knock on some of those again. We're going to knock on some new ones, and we're going to keep having conversations. So our strategy is not going to be a whole lot different.
Since it now becomes you and Jake, a lot of people have said that you and Ron had a heavy Tarrant County assessor, which Ron was, and serving Joe Barton for as long and with such noble service as he did, and that Jake is more of the Ellison Navarro kind of thing. Do you view it as the geographic dichotomy like that or not?
I don't look at it that way. You know, I'm pleased with my results throughout the district. I came in second in Ellis. I won Navarro and I won Tarrant. Of course, we're going to be stronger in Tarrant. That's where our home is, and that's, you know, where we've been that most active for the longest period of time. But over these years, you know, we've built strong relationships throughout the district, and that's borne out. You know, we've got time and position, so to speak. So both of us have had that, and I spent so much time in all three counties. I don't really look at it that way. Clearly, some people do, you know, people like their hometown favorites. But in terms of the strategy and the messaging and My calendar, I've been in, I would say I've been in all three counties equally, and I don't intend to change that for the runoff.
Early voting between you and Jake, you and Jake were the top early vote getters, and it was a virtual dead heat, roughly exactly like 7,100 votes. Then a massive increase for you on actual election day might have been that Trump endorsement. What do you think?
Well, I certainly think that didn't hurt. I do believe that was helpful. You know, like I said a minute ago, this district is a conservative district. I mean, you know, the Democrats have made several runs at this, haven't they, Mark? But in the end, it ends up being a conservative district, and President Trump's policies work. You know, a strong border, strong national defense. He strengthened our economy with lower taxes and lower regulations. He did all of those things that just work. And I think that people have now seen that. They've seen the stark contrast in what has happened in the first, a little over 100 days now of the Biden administration. And, his campaigning on bringing unity has been the exact opposite of the way he's behaved as the president. So I think that, you know, people are speaking very loudly, and they were very clear they want conservative policy.
Susan Wright is here. She and Jake Elzey are in the runoff, which will be at some point. We might learn that this week, maybe even today, and it could be next month, could be month after. But either way, we got a few more weeks to go in this regard. And it's going to resemble, since it's two Republicans, a kind of a primary battle where most of the views are pretty well the same, not much difference. But I always ask, when it's Republican versus Republican, what differences do you see? And I'll ask Jake the same things. Policy-wise, you've been on a stage, I guess, in various forums and such. But do you see in any big policy differences between the two of you?
I don't know that among the Republican field there's very many deep differences. I think that the two differences you're going to have here are style, and I think you're going to have some I don't know how much policy differences, but like the way we present those policies, the way we enact those policies. You know, I've been working on policy issues and working with elected officials and legislation for a really long time. This is the first session, as a matter of fact, for the Texas legislature that I haven't been in Austin working on policy and talking to legislators about the Republican Party platform priorities and about amendments to different bills. So that part's been a little bit new for me. But I think that people are going to have to make a decision on who do you trust to go do this? Who can you count on? Who do you know that's been here and has been in the trenches with you? And I'm really happy with my record on that, and I'm happy to run on that.
The one of the policy things that I wanted to take a look at for a moment was immigration, because you had a couple of mailers that Jake essentially is Joe Biden. Their plans, their crisis, bad for Texas. Another one with a scary tatted MS-13 member or something, Jake Elzey's dangerous plan for open borders. In what way is Jake for open borders?
Well, that is taken from some of his words, and it's not meant to be a positive or a negative, but simply a conversation, you know. You know, when we run against Democrats, we do the exact same thing. A virtual border is not a secure border. You know, I don't need to see people coming across the border to know that they're coming across. They're coming across in droves. People loud and clear in this district and across the nation want that border secured. And so that's certainly part of a plan that can be done, but a solid, secure border is something that people want. That's something that I certainly support and the people of the 6th District support.
Gotcha. So your assertion is that whatever border security Jake envisions, it is not as secure as yours because you prefer actual tangible walls and stuff and less virtual stuff?
Well, I'm not alleging his view on anything. Those were his words. And so
I'm guessing he didn't say open border. I'm guessing he did not say I am for open borders. Your mailer about him does. So I'm wondering, in what way is Jake for open borders?
Well, let me just say this, Mark. When the Democrats say that they're for open borders, we Republicans say, I'm sorry, when they say they're for virtual borders, we Republicans say, well, that really equates to an open border, doesn't it? And so the fact of the matter is, if we can question one policy, we should question it among ourselves. It's just a conversation, that's all. And the question that I would have for anyone is, if that's the words that you chose then, and that's the policy that you had then, and today you have a different policy, which I'm clear that he does say different things today, what has changed? What has changed? What is the difference? I don't believe that he's for open borders. I believe that the policy that he advocated for is an open border policy. So what is the difference there? I'm very clear on my policies, and I have been for a very long time because I've done policy work for a very long time. You know, this job is a real job. You know that. This is not a soundbite. This is not appearances. This is not just quick hit it and go. There's a lot of hard work that goes into this. There's a lot of deep study and thorough examination that has to happen. I've done all those things, and I'm willing to have these conversations.
I always ask people, if you win, what happens next? So at some point, we are going to get a winner. And if you are installed as your husband's successor and you are the new congresswoman from Texas 06, here we are all slogging through that first term of Biden. What do you think the biggest challenges are?
Well, the biggest challenges are first, we've got to try and get a message out. And second, you know, the Democrats are not governing. They are just jamming through Democratic wish lists, and that's not what's in the interest of the people. They have no mandate. So we'll work hard to, you know, there's some moderate Democrats that could come across the aisle and vote with us and block some of these things. And to the extent I'm able to do that, I'm happy to do that. I've got a history of working across the aisle on common interests, and I'll put that to work as soon as I get there. Mm-hmm. We've got to block some of these things that are happening, and then we're going to take back the House in 2022, and then we'll start putting the America First agenda in place and rebuilding what we had when Biden took over in January and try to get our country back on track again.
All right. I want to make sure I've got all the online stuff correct. The website is Susan Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, SusanWrightForCongress.com, correct? And the Twitter feed is Susan Wright TX6, Susan Wright TX6 on Twitter. Well, congratulations. Boy, is there any, is like football season where you immediately dive in, you know, and just start plotting and planning and doing 57 things like today? Or do you get to take a brief breather before saddling back up and knocking on doors?
Well, I will tell you, I did sleep in a little bit yesterday. I went to a later mass than I normally go to. But yesterday I had family in from out of town, so we spent some family time together. But we're back hard at it this morning. You know, we've got doors to knock and people to talk to and phone calls to make. So we're back at it.
Well, we'll be talking during the path, and we'll see where it all goes. And thank you. Congratulations for your Saturday result. And thanks, as always. Appreciate you being on, Susan. Thank you very, very much.
Mark, thanks a million. I always love talking to you. Take care.
You bet. God bless. Susan Wright, 821. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
No one will ever touch me that way, the way that you did that very first day. And
it is Christopher Cross's birthday.
Never.
70, dude.
I'll live alone, hide myself behind my teeth.
Born in San Antonio.
No, I
just like me.
Will never be the same without your love.
6 years earlier than me.
I'll live alone.
Little Never Be the Same. That album, man, that was the sailing and Never Be the Same. And then he did the Arthur's theme thing. So good for him. I hope he invested well. Christopher Cross, 70 years old. All right. So, all right. 866-660-5759. I love Susan. She's awesome. Love Ron. Miss Ron, as she obviously does. And so we got through, you know, sort of the normal policy and strategy questions and stuff like that. You know, but doggone it, man. My wish is to not see stuff like this. And I know that campaign ads are not a place for nuance. Well, here's, you know, 1,000 words on why we feel that our border plan is somewhat better than Jake's. No, but you put a dangerous looking, tatted up MS-13 gang member, and then Jake Elzey's scolding face, weak on immigration, dangerous for Texas. Jake Elzey's dangerous plan, an open border. That's why I asked her, in what way is Jake for open borders? And she said, well, I'm not really saying Jake's for open borders. Your mailer does. I hate this. That doesn't feel like Susan. That doesn't sound like Susan. I smell handlers. And of course, the argument can be made that this is how you win. And in race after race after race, it probably is. So Jake will be on at 9:05, and I will ask this proud, decorated veteran how he feels about being part of Joe Biden's dangerous plan for open borders. Sound good? All right. And by the way, if Jake ever savages Susan, I'll ask him about that too. And I don't know, maybe he will. I don't know, man. I don't know. All I know is that it's there. makes me a little crazy. You know, I know that our attention spans are short. I know that you got to strike while the iron is hot and all those lovely cliches. But I think this is a lot of what turns people off of politics. And that Trump endorsement is huge. That was thousands of votes for Susan, and good for her, by the way. I mean, that's, I would hope that, because I think we probably aren't going to have a whole lot of advertising like immediately, but especially if the runoff is next month instead of July, and it may be in the closing weeks, and which is interesting. I didn't hear a lot of Susan on radio at all. The mailers were the issue. The things in your mailbox were the issue. And, as Republicans, when we start savaging each other, I think it's dispiriting. I think which may be a funny thing for me to say, if you take a look at my weekend, thoughts about Mitt Romney, who is a posing, self-absorbed peacock who is ed up with Trump hatred. I will never hesitate to go after a Republican who I think is harmful to the conservative cause. By the way, and maybe we'll play this here next. I'll do some calls here in a second as well. 866-660-5759. Mitt Romney goes before the Utah Republican Party and very nearly gets booed off the stage. I never advocate that, but there are a lot of people who are like mystified at why a group of conservatives in Utah would have a problem with Mitt Romney. Three guesses. It is his savagery toward President Trump, which telegraphs that he is an unfit warrior moving forward in these challenging times. Let us move forward into a Gordon Griffin newscast and then move forward thereafter into your calls and other audio I have to play and other stuff I got going on. And again, that was Susan Wright. If you missed it, catch the podcast. Rhonda has the podcast up within minutes after we're done at 10 at 6:60 a.m. theanswer.com. Click podcast, click my happy face, and there you are. And Jay Kelsey joins us 9:05. So covering Texas 06 with the runoff here on the first day after a weekend of big time politics in Fort Worth. Maddie Parker and Deborah Peoples. You gotta vote for Maddie. Gotta keep Fort Worth in conservative hands. And okay, I have other sentences in my head. I will pause now, get into the newscast, come back out and start talking more with your assistance alongside at 866-660-5759. Grab a line. Mark Davis, 832. Here's Gordon.
Springtime, all in the merry month of May. Oh, the heavenly hours, oh, the come again day. Oh, the jolly springtime, in the merry month of May. Oh, the heavenly hours, oh, the come again day.
Let the day run long, let the river run high.
2015.
That tomorrow may live, so much yesterday died.
Little jolly springtime.
Let the resin
in the merry, merry month of May.
Make the green leaf bud.
Yeah, we'll see how merry it
is. Feeding it in my blood.
All righty. 866-660-5759. I got a bunch of stuff from over the weekend to address, but first, I got folks have been waiting during the newscast, so let's address them as well. 866-660-5759. We are in Mansfield. Steve, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Good, man. So I appreciate your commentary, and I really respect your opinion. I am curious, though, on one thing. So I hear you talk about it with Mike and just on your own about, you know, vaccines and that businesses have a right to decide whether they want to require a person to be vaccinated, like an airline and so on, which I largely agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Largely.
But then one thing that I have heard to address or what hasn't been part of that conversation, my wife and I have both had COVID, and my wife has some medical conditions that, you know, her doctor would advise her not to take the vaccine. And so since she's had COVID, in theory, she should be not a carrier and not going to get it again kind of deal.
Careful. We do not know how long after having it one remains unlikely. Nothing's ever impossible. There are tons of people walking around who got it twice. But are you far less likely? Yes, you are, which is why the vaccine remains a good idea, even if you've had it. Now, if your wife has some condition or something with an actual doctor, not some quack, some anti-vax quack, but her actual doctor who says there's a condition that where it's really ill-advised for her to get it, well, then I think there's some special dispensation that she should be afforded in that regard.
Okay. I was just curious because, largely I agree with that. But with every rule, there's an exception, and I just would be afraid that a person like my wife might have to not be a part of society.
But here's where it gets tricky. We don't know each other, so it's not, you know, like a HIPAA violation yet. What makes it a bad idea for her to get the vaccine?
She has some pretty severe rheumatoid arthritis, and the doctor is very concerned that that will add stress to her immune system and exacerbate the condition.
Gotcha. Okay. Good answer, and thank you. Two things that become problematic in this. That's plausible. In line, 1,000 people behind that are people just flat making stuff up. Here's why I don't want to have it, and anybody can find a doctor to say anything that's not nearly as plausible or solid as yours, meaning that it just becomes totally and completely meaningless. Secondly, there's also a concept called if an airline or a cruise ship or something has this rule and your bride has a condition that makes the vaccine a bad idea, that ain't the airline's problem. It's her problem. I mean, that's logic that exists all the time, everywhere. So that may be the case in some instances. And again, if we all try to be nice guys and say, well, she's got the thing that the doctors note, blah, blah, blah. Great, because get ready, because the gates are about to be burst down by 5,000 people with some quack who said something about some condition they had, in the Gerald Ford administration, means they can't get the vaccine either. It's tricky.
It is tricky, and I definitely appreciate your perspective. Again, I agree with it mostly. It's just a challenge.
No, it is. I know. I welcome. And again, my overall wish, and I've been talking about this with Mike and talking about this with you, please let this all become relatively moot as our COVID landscape just gets better and better and better, and we don't even have a summer or fall filled with those kinds of places where unvaccinated people can't go.
Indeed.
All right, man. Hey, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. All right, 866-660-5759. Let us go to Parker. Russell. Hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark.
Howdy.
Hey there.
This is the go ahead.
Yeah. So one thing I just want to say is 50% of all doctors graduate at the bottom half of their class. So whatever doctor you listen to, you need to ask them, where did they graduate?
That's okay. Hang on a second. 50%. Okay. Statistically, that may not actually be true, because not everybody that graduates from medical school goes on and becomes a doctor. Maybe some of the folks toward the upper echelons probably do. But anyway, your point being point being that, believe you me, a medical degree on the wall doesn't necessarily mean everything. Completely correct. Just as being a constitutional attorney or an economist can be dicey as well.
That's right. You can have a degree and still be a quack.
There's evidence of that everywhere.
Yes, at the highest levels.
Oh no. Well, listen. There is nothing wrong with the medical credentials of Anthony Fauci. There is nothing wrong with the medical credentials. I heard a guy. Now this is pretty crazy. The other day, CNN, right? CNN had on a doctor down in Houston who had been filled with panic when Governor Abbott relaxed the mask mandate. It was a Houston doctor who had said, "Oh, heavens, this is going to be dreadful. Abbott did exactly the wrong thing. This is terrible policy." And CNN had this doctor back on now, weeks later, when we're doing great, thank you very much, to sort of ask to ask this doctor about it. So first of all, a rare day where I thought, wow, good for CNN. This doctor went cherry picking for just some ER that he was familiar with where maybe they had, you know, 10 people in the hospital last week and now they got 20. Okay, wow, that'll happen. But the selective attention, the willful blindness, and this is why the word expert has become such a damaged term and has such an asterisk by it, because your brain knowledge, your book smarts can be just fine, but it is so often guided by what kind of heart beats in your chest? What kind of politics, you know, wraps around your spine? And if you are an authoritarian, big government, big medicine, it can take you off the path of logic sometimes.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think I would want to walk into Fauci's office and have him treat me.
No, if Fauci had an actual practice where his problem was to do something medical to me, that'd be great. What I don't want him doing is running my country. What I don't want him doing is making policy decisions based on his authoritarian streak. Russell, thank you enormously. I think I was talking to, it might have been on the Friday show, is that big government and big medicine, they are not going to easily be pried away from this warm glow of spotlight that they've been enjoying. Big government authoritarians, Gavin Newsom, Clay Jenkins in Dallas County, they have, it's like a big old crack pipe. Everybody just flocking to them. Please tell us what to do. Please tell us what we can and cannot do. And as for big medicine, and what I mean by that are folks like this Houston doctor who knew for all the world, and it was not his medical knowledge that took him there. It was his gut, his political gut, maybe his narcissism that led him to think, well, I know it all. I know everything. Texas is going to be a horrible, horrible COVID super spreader after Governor Abbott lifts the mask mandate. And guess what? It didn't happen. It's time for some humility from these people. And that you're not going to get that. And they're not going to let us out. So the conclusion I reached was that the path to normalcy does not involve the power brokers, politicians, big medicine handing normalcy back to us. The path to normalcy is us claiming normalcy, grasping normalcy, insisting on normalcy. And then when everything works out fine, government and big medicine will say, we wanted you to do that all the time. We are in Arlington. Betty, happy Monday. How are you?
Hey, good morning. So let me make sure I understand this correctly, Mark.
Yes.
Are you saying that a business has a right to deny service to people who are not vaccinated?
Of course
it does. Did I understand that?
Well, of course you do. That's called their liberty.
So the business has a right to make somebody take an experimental medical procedure.
You can feel about it however you like, and if that's the reason you don't want to do it, that's fine. Then don't go into that business. That's your liberty.
Well, what if it's a grocery store?
Then find another grocery store.
What if it's an airline?
Find another airline.
I can't believe you're saying this. I really can't.
Why? What is so tough to swallow? That is called their liberty. Are you telling me that businesses should be required to accept unvaccinated customers? What?
They should not.
Really?
They should not require people to take an
experimental. Just answer the question in exactly the way I've asked it, because you have to confront what you're actually saying. Are you telling me that in a free country, that a business choosing to make a decision on whom they let in the door, that is a latitude that they have a right to have? No shoes, no shirt, no service. I mean, this is a little, you know, bigger deal than that. But that they do not have the right to have that rule for their business? Betty, is that what you're telling me?
No, I don't believe they have the right to this rule.
Why not? Why not? Tell me why not.
Because this It's not a vaccine.
Betty, stop it. You're giving me reasons why you don't like it, or why maybe your business would not have that rule. Betty, it's not in the question that I've asked. You're bagging on the vax. Great, bag on the vax all day. I'm telling you why a business that believes in it and wants it, maybe in total disagreement with you, which both of you have a right to your positions, why are you telling me that that business should be forced to admit clientele under your rules? Why?
Because you're setting us up for a vaccination card ID.
Not at all. Which, by the way, I've said, first of all, passport is a terrible word. I don't want government to have anything to do with it. If at some point there's some app you have on the phone where the way you look at a menu at Micocina, I don't care about that. But I don't want government involved in it at all. I want it to be a compact between businesses and clientele. And if you're concerned about some government, data thing, I share that concern. And that's why I want government to have pretty well nothing to do with it. But that wasn't my question either. You seem to believe that businesses should be required to accept unvaccinated clientele, and that's anti-liberty.
I think it's a slippery slope.
And some things are, and I tend to be as vigilant about the slippery slope as most folks. But guess what? Sometimes it's not. And so I'm going to wait for it to some level of reason to believe that this leads us to, the Bill Gates subcutaneous chip. Not that that's where you're going. I'm just to say. Appreciate you. Thank you. 852, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
Those were the days, my friend.
Fall of 1968.
Those were the days. Oh, yes, those were the days.
Mary Hopkin was so young at that time in 1968. She is but a spry 71 today. Those were the days from 1968. Well, these are the days that we chronicle together. Let's plow forward into the 9 o'clock hour and do it with your calls and a chat with Jake Elzey and much, much more. Happy Monday. Happy May. Mark Davis back with you in the next hour right here on 660 AM The Answer.